were on vacation last week in Colorado, and we had a great time. But today I want to do things a little bit differently. A couple weeks ago, we had you stand up, sit down, singing and all that kind of stuff. Jason was rocking the house last week, and today I just want to sit with you and have a little fireside chat. So we're going to pretend it's a little colder than it is, and we're going to pretend October is you know, almost on us, and let's just sit and visit a little bit this morning. I wanted to tell you a little bit about vacation for me. Vacation's a funny thing for me. It's people keep asking me, are you rested when you get back from vacation? And my answer to that is always no. Because to me, a vacation is, you gotta go on vacation. And so if I don't come back more tired than when I went, the vacation was a bust. And so for me, it's about riding up hills and hiking and going places and seeing things. And I feel like if I don't see every single mountain in Colorado when I'm there, I just missed it somehow. It's not like that for Shelly, though. For Shelly, vacation is about relaxing. For Shelly, vacation is about reading a good book, maybe have an opportunity to lay out, get a little bit of sun, just sleep a little bit, enjoy the room, enjoy the ambiance of wherever we're staying. And if she goes and sees some stuff, that's good too, but she really just likes to, you know, decompress. And so if we go all the time, it really just doesn't seem like a vacation to her. In fact, I can truly tell you, she's not a happy camper if we go. Shelly, to give her time to relax is a way that I can give her a blessing. And in a small way, and this is not, of course, anyway, I don't mean to compare my love to God's love for her, but in my own small way, I get to show her a little bit of God's love for her by how I show her love. And so when I take her on a vacation, I have to make sure to incorporate those things that she values so much, because that way she knows that I love her. So y'all ready for today? Let's take a big deep breath together. We're just going to relax today and have a little fun. I've been thinking a lot about the heart of God lately. And we know from 1 John 4:8, right, that God is first and foremost love, right? Everyone know that? Shake your heads with me. God is love. And so the core of God is to love. But the thing about love is that love for God is a way of being, but love is known by how it's shown. Okay, you get that? Love is known by how it's shown. If I tell you that I love you, but I never show you that I love you in any way, you go, he doesn't really love me. And it's the same with God. If God says he loves us, but we never encounter God's love in any way, you question that. And so God has always begun from the beginning about showing us how much he loves us. The key to discovering God's heart, which is the title of the sermon today, is to see how God expresses his love to us. And if we can see how God expresses love, then we can see how we can express God's love to other people, right? And so we need to go all the way back to the beginning to see this. And I want to go all the way back to Genesis 1. And in Genesis 1, it's an interesting thing because we see God's love from the very creation story itself. But I want you to read it through the lens of God expressing and giving love. Take a look. If you've picked up a Bible ever, you've read that part. Let us make man in our image, after our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over the livestock and over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So God made man in his own image, and in the image of God he created him, male and female he created them. And God blessed them. Okay, that's the first thing. See that right there? So what God did in creation was to bless us by giving us a place to live, by giving us life itself. And so he goes on in verse 20, he says, and God blessed them, and then he said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it. And here it is, another giving thing. And God gave us dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over every living thing that moves on the earth. But God wasn't done yet. And then in verse 29, God says, behold, I have given you not only everything that's alive, I have also given you every plant yielding seed that's on the face of all the earth, and every tree with seed in its fruit, and you shall have them for food. and to every beast of the earth and every bird of the heavens and everything that creeps on the earth and everything that has the breath of life, I have given every green plant for food. So he has provided everything we need to live, and he also provides everything for all the animals that we are supposed to subdue. And so the ones that we have dominion over that he has given us, he's also providing for them. And it was so. And God saw that everything he had made, and behold, it was very good. And there was evening and there was morning on the sixth day. And so God, from the beginning, the whole point of creation was to give us blessings. He gave Adam and Eve the whole world. Basically gave them just everything in it and said, go have fun. You get everything. Everything's under your control. I have given it all to you. I want you to enjoy it. And God was with them in the beginning, and he was talking with them and interacting with them all the time, and he was blessing them every moment of their lives. I mean, just imagine everywhere you went, God was there. We know that God was walking in the garden. So we know that they were seeing him face to face. And of course, the reason we don't see him face to face is because of what happened next. He gave him one rule. Don't eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. One rule. Eat everything else out there. There was no laws forbidding them from eating anything. Just don't eat from the one tree. One rule. That's all you got to do to survive. One rule. And of course, they didn't listen. They didn't listen. And God says, just don't. Everything I've given you is a blessing. Just trust me on this one thing. Don't eat from the one tree. But they ate. And when they ate, God had provided everything else that was given to them to eat, that they were supposed to take, that was essentially a present. But now they took the one thing they weren't supposed to take. Because that's what sin's all about. Sin is about taking. Sin is about seeing the small picture in life instead of the big picture of what God is doing. It's when we exchange the amazing things in God's glory for a small little fraction of excitement or energy or whatever it is that causes us to want to do whatever sin it is. It's when we exchange this little bitty tiny picture of what it could be for the instead of embracing the giant picture that God has in store for us. See, in a perfect world, blessing is the norm. Blessing is what God was doing from the beginning, over and over and over, constantly blessing. And sadly, though, and he expected Adam and Eve to be blessings as well. But sadly, what happens is it takes a tragedy for most people to remember that we're supposed to be a blessing. But it's not that way with us, is it? It's supposed to be more for that than it is for us. This week, we remembered 9/11. And I was thinking about 9/11 a lot. And do you realize that, and I'm going to do this conservatively. Do you realize now that if you're less than 20 years old, or if people less than 20 years old don't have a functional memory of 9/11? Now, it happened, 16 years ago, and I'm assuming that you have your earliest memories at like 4 years old, let's say. I mean, the absolute earliest memories. So let's just say conservatively that everyone under 20 does not remember that day firsthand. Unless they're one of those unique kids that has like, I remember stuff at one, but most, you know, come on. Most of us don't remember that day, or most under 20 don't remember that day. They're learning about 9/11 from what they see on TV or what they learn in school. But you remember what happened if you're older 20, you remember what happened is we forgot our differences for a small time, didn't we? America was going through all types of things, just like America is going through right now. But when 9/11 happened, we forgot all of those things, and we came together as a country, and we became Americans once again, and we became people that were proud of one another, we became people that were unified, and it lasted for a while. Didn't stick though, did it? But for a while there, for a couple, 3 years, we were unified. We were focused. We've seen some hurricanes in the last month. Two big ones. First one, of course, impacted Texas directly. And I was so proud of our church. You guys did an amazing job. We put the call out on a Friday afternoon at 1 o'clock and had a van load of stuff within 3 hours to take down to Houston. And we did it again on Sunday and took another van load down full of stuff. And you guys, oh, not only that, we have so far raised over $9,000, close to $10,000 for Harvey Relief. But we're not done yet. We're going to start organizing to be able to send teams down. And so if you have some time or an interest, we're going to give you the opportunity to go down and help people dig out from their houses, help clean up. And there's still stuff coming. We're going to be letting you guys know about that probably next week. And I'm expecting. So it's coming. But what I want to say, though, is you saw the opportunity to love people who were in need, and you embraced that opportunity. You did that. And it was an awesome thing to see. Didn't it feel great when you were bringing down diapers or you know, even toilet paper or whatever things we were bringing? Didn't it feel good when you walked up and you gave it to us to put into the van to carry down there, knowing we were going to put that in people's hands that very day? You know it did. It was an awesome thing. It was a beautiful thing. And you expressed your love by giving. And it's no accident that you did. Because when you give, you show the heart of God. Because the heart of God is giving. God is love. Love gives. Love blesses. And so it's a natural thing for God's people. It's a natural thing for God's people to want to express that heart that God has given us because of what He has given us. Anyone here love to pay taxes? I mean, is there anybody here that's just like, you know, I can't wait for April. It is my favorite time of year. Forget Christmas, you know, stuff Easter. I'm ready for April because I want to pay my taxes. Anybody? Come on. Nobody. I'm shocked. But you know why that is? It's because taxes are forced giving. Taxes, we are told what we're going to pay, and we have to pay it. And what happens if we don't pay it? We get thrown in jail, right? Or at least we get more fines. We have to pay more if we don't pay. And it's part of being a citizen of the United States, and good stuff happens out of that. But you get told this is the amount you pay based on how much you made, and you better pay it. And so nobody relishes and gets excited and says, man, I can't wait to write that check. I don't want any back. I don't want a refund. I want to give more of it. Nobody does that. But that's also the reason we don't do force giving in church. Because God isn't about force giving. God isn't about making us pay to receive His blessings. So why do we give then? Why do we give in church? Why is it that we take up an offering every week? And I want to just take a minute and talk to you about why this is so critical and important. We talked a few weeks ago, you know, we talked about why we show up. And then we talked about why we sing. Jason talked last week about why we love and did a great sermon on the prodigal son. And this week I want to talk to you a little bit about why giving shows the heart of God in us. If you've got your Bibles with you, jump over to 2 Corinthians 8:1. And I'm going to show you three little passages real quick that are really key to understanding why giving actually matters and why giving will change your life. 2 Corinthians 8:1. And I'm going to read out a little different translation this morning. Carly's going to pop it up there. I'm going to be using New Living Translation for the next couple of passages here, and then I'm going to switch back to my ESV, but I just like the way that it shows you this out of NLT. So look what it says. It says, now I want you to know, dear brothers and sisters, what God in His kindness, this is the Apostle Paul talking, and he's talking to the church in Corinth, but he's going to talk to them about the churches in Macedonia, which are not too far away. And he says, I want to talk to you about what God has done. Okay, first off, he's going to talk about giving, but he's talking about what God has done through that giving, through the churches in Macedonia. They, the church in Macedonia, are being tested by many troubles, and they are very poor. But they are also filled with abundant joy, which has overflowed into rich generosity. For I can testify that they gave not only what they could afford, but far more. And they did it of their own free will. Hint, hint. Not taxes. they begged us again and again for the privilege of sharing in the gift for the believers in Jerusalem. And they did even more than we had hoped, for their first action was to give themselves to the Lord and to us, just as God wanted them to do. And so you see there that they were inspired to give, and it was God that inspired them to give. It was what God wanted them to do, to be a part of that. And so the key question is, why? Why? And so we urge Titus in verse 6, who encourage your giving in the first place, to return to you and encourage you to finish this ministry of giving, since you excel in so many ways. And we can apply these to our church too. In your faith, in your gifted speakers, in your knowledge, in your enthusiasm, and your love from us. So he's telling them that they do so many things well, that's part of all that I think everybody in this church that would agree that this is part of what we do as a church. We have to have faith, and we study to have knowledge, we have enthusiasm, we have love, but he also wants us to excel in the gracious act of giving. And he says, I'm not commanding you. Again, it's not taxes. But here's what he says. Don't miss this. I am testing how genuine your love is by comparing it with the eagerness of the other churches. That's a challenge. And what he's saying there is that thing. It's like we can say we have love, but love is known by how it is shown. It is known by what you do with it. If you say you love, but you don't show that love, then how do you really know that you love? And so one of the first things about giving is that we show that we have love. When we give, we create opportunities to bless people with the gospel of Jesus Christ. We send money out to missionaries. We're getting ready right now, for example, to do Depot Days. And in Depot Days coming up here, we're gonna invite. Last year it was just students, but this year we're gonna be letting you know. I'm jumping on your announcement, but Jason gonna tell you again in a minute. We're gonna remind you, but we're going to be in next week doing signups for adults, and we're going to do two things. We're going to have 2-hour slots for people. We're going to 10x20 tent that we're just getting for this event. We're going to be raising money for Hurricane Harvey relief by selling popcorn and cotton candy. We're going to be giving out free water bottles that we're going to have our logos on for the first time. We're actually working on a real logo now. We're pretty excited, and we're going to have those, and we're going to be giving those out. We're going to have two times during the day, 11:30 and 1:30. Am I right? 11:30 and 1:30. That we're going to ask a whole bunch of people to come, a lot of you to come, and help us hand out water bottles twice during the day. You won't have to stay for 2-hour shift. We're just going to hand out a block of water bottles, shake hands with people, get to know people, interact with people, let them know that we love them. But we do those things with money that we give. We create those opportunities for the gospel. We create those opportunities to be a blessing. And in this case, we're creating opportunities to raise still yet more money for the people that are suffering because of Hurricane Harvey. And also, when you give, you bring hope to the people that we serve. You have no idea how often we help people that are in real dire need with money that people give. We have people come in every week who are just trying to put some food on the table for their kids, and they walk in, they just say, do you have some canned goods, just anything that I can give my kids, or I can eat? I mean, they're not looking for, like, you know, they're not saying, hey, I need $100. You're just saying, you got some raviolios or something. And all of that comes from what we give. But I don't want you to miss it. Giving tests our love for God and for one another. For other people. And so we are supposed to be a church. Look, I'm not commanding you. Or I'm sorry, he said in verse 7, he says, I want you to excel in the gracious act of giving. And so what I'm saying to us is we need to be a church that excels in giving. It's worth it. Because we can't do the things that we need to, that God tasks us to do, unless we all give. And that includes me. I have to be a giver. Jason has to be a giver. All of our staff have to be givers. Our leaders have to be givers. All of us need to be givers. Because it puts the mission that God has given us first and gives us the opportunity. But I want you to see this verse also, a little different tack. It goes on in 2 Corinthians 9, the next chapter. It talks about the reason. And it says, remember this, a farmer who plants only a few seeds will get a small crop, but the one who plants generously will get a generous crop. Now that's a blessing, and that's a promise. So if you give, we'll be able to do good stuff. If as a church we give together, then we will be able to bless others more. But when we bless others more, God promises that he will bless us more so that we can bless others more, yet more still. For you must decide in your heart how much to give. We're going to talk about that in a second. But listen to this. Don't give reluctantly or in response to pressure. So hear me very carefully this morning. I'm not here to demand that people give. I'm not here to say you must do this or do that. What I'm here trying to tell you, and what I'm ultimately want you to do, is to tell you why I think it's important to give and why I give. And why when we give together, we can do some incredible things. Look what it says, though. God loves a person who gives cheerfully. So the opposite of giving cheerfully is giving reluctantly, right? Or giving in response to pressure, or giving unwillingly. That's taxes. Not what we do. But verse 8, when you give cheerfully, God will provide generously all that you need, and then you will always have everything you need and plenty of left over to share with others. Now that's a good promise, isn't it? If you give, God will bless you to give more. But when you get more, you got to continue to give cheerfully. And be thankful for those blessings and recognize that God keeps giving you more so that you can be a bigger and bigger blessing. You know why God loves a cheerful giver so much? Because he is the most cheerful giver. God loves us to give because it reflects his heart. God is love, and his love overflows to us with giving all of the time. That's what we call blessings. And so when we give, we reflect his heart. Here's the reality. A heart that only takes will always fight with love. A heart that only takes will always struggle, fight, and be at odds with godly love. It's so important. It's so critical that I don't know if you realize this, but giving is the only place in the Bible. It's the only thing that God gives us permission to test him about. God tells us, in fact, in the book of Malachi, chapter 3, starting in verse 7, test me in this. Look what it says. It says, from the days of, he's talking to Israel here, he says, from the days of your fathers you have turned aside from my statutes. Now, this is Old Testament, so they're talking about the law. It's the last book in the Old Testament before Jesus came. And it says, and you have not kept them. So return to me, and I will return to you, says the Lord of hosts. But you say, how will we return? And God says, will a man rob God? Yet you are robbing me. But you say, how have we robbed you? And he says, in your tithes and contribution. And we're going to get to that tithe thing in a minute. You are cursed with a curse, for you are robbing me, the whole nation of you. Bring the full tithe into the storehouse. By the way, tithe in the Old Testament was like upper 20%. Depends on the list you see, but it wasn't 10% like we talk about as Christians. It was more than a quarter of what you made were given into the temple. So bring the full tithe into the storehouse that there may be food in my storehouse. But here's the key thing for us. This is the transferable point. Therefore, put me to the test, says the Lord of hosts, and see if I will not open the windows of heaven for you and pour down such a blessing until there is no more need. Now that goes back to the verse we read right before, that if we give, if we cheerfully become a blessing, then God will give us more so that we can give more. And God will make sure that there is no need because we are being the people that reflect his heart. Jesus challenges us to be givers because it's the core of who he is. On the cross, he gave us the thing that can never be repaid. He gave us the blessing that we just can't even begin. We don't even try to repay it because it's such a massive, unrepayable gift. That's why it's given by grace. But he gives us the opportunity. He gives us the opportunity to show his heart to others by being a blessing, just like he is a blessing to us. You know, there are four types of people in every church. A couple weeks ago, I talked about three types of givers. This week, I want to, or three types of givers, three types of singers or non-singers. This week, I want to tell you there are four types of people in every church when it comes to giving as well. There are some who have discovered the blessings of giving joyfully. and they give constantly. There are some who give a little bit, but they don't give with a cheerful heart, and so they miss some of the blessings that comes by giving. They look at giving as something they're obligated to do instead of something they get to do, and so they miss out on the amazing parts of it. Then there are some who never give. There are some who say, that's my money, nobody's going to grab it, the church is just trying to get it, that guy wants it, that girl wants it, and I'm not giving it, it's mine. And then there are some who really want to give, but they're so, they have so little that it's very difficult. They're just trying to make ends meet, and they just say, I can't tithe, I can't give that much, because I'm just trying to put food on the table. And so you've got all of these different types of people sitting in every room, and they're real places where people are in their hearts, and we've got to talk about those things for a moment. So it begs the question, what do we do with that? And the first thing is, let's clear some stuff up. Question one, how much is enough? Is it 10%? The answer in the New Testament is actually maybe. Maybe. 10% is a good baseline, and Christians have used it for a long time, and it's somewhere to start, but it's not a requirement in the New Testament to give exactly 10%. You know what the New Testament model is? Joyful, sacrificial giving. And for some people, that's a dollar. If it's a person that's just trying to put food on the table so their kids can eat, if they just give a dollar, that is a sacrificial, joyful gift potentially. But there are for other people that are in the room that 10% is no sacrifice at all. I have actually met people that they call it reverse tithing. They give 90% of their income because they make so much money that they can more than live off of 10%. And so they just give away because that to them is what's sacrificial. But I'm not going to sit here and say that's what you have to do. That's between that person and God. But what I will tell you is that for some people, giving anything is a true sacrifice for the moment. But I can also tell you that if you start giving anything, if you don't give at all, and you give it joyfully and sacrificially, you will find out that suddenly you seem to have more. I have found in my life that when I give, I'm never going, man, I just wish I wouldn't have given that. I couldn't feed the kids this week. I find that even if you start giving, you suddenly have enough to give a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. And what it is God changing your heart and your priorities, but he also at times will bless you so that you can do more with what he gives you. You see, it's the cheerful heart of sacrificial giving that brings joy to God. That's the amazing thing, is it's not an exact amount. But let's just say that you need to think between you and God and talk to him and pray and ask yourself, what is sacrificial to me? But I want to tell you this. The church council, our finance team, our staff, and I believe so much that you will discover the heart of God through joyful sacrificial giving that we are going to quote Marlon Brando, we're going to make you an offer you can't refuse. Seriously, we are going to give you a no-risk opportunity to test God in the one place that God says, test me. And what we're going to do is we want to offer out to everyone in the church, and I hope every one of you will consider this and take me seriously on this. We want to do a 90-day giving challenge. And here's how it works. First thing, like I said, talk to Jesus. Talk to Jesus and resolve with him what is joyful sacrificial giving for you at this moment in your life. And it may be a dollar, and it may be 40% of your income. It may be 10% of your income. It could be 12%, whatever it is. I'm not interested in knowing that. What I'm interested in is you talking to God and being candid with him and listening to him and figuring out what is joyful sacrificial giving. And then what I want you to do is starting next Sunday, well, we're going to do our offering in a little while here, but I really want you to think about it this week and start next week. If you came to prepared to give today, that's awesome, but it's what I'm really talking about starts next week. And for 90 days, for every Sunday that you come to church, I want you to be sure and give and fill out. We have little cards, little envelopes in the pews. And here's the thing. You need to fill those out to be a part of this. Because If you don't, then we don't have a record of what you gave. Now, that's good for taxes because we get to give you back a giving record at the end of the year. So if you give and don't give that, you should, by the way, it helps with taxes. But here's the thing. We want to have a record of it. And after 90 days, if you feel that there is no benefit, if you feel you have not been blessed, if you feel you have not grown in your faith, if you have not felt closer to the heart of God through the end of it, we will return 100% of what you gave. No risk. We believe so wholeheartedly that you will be blessed and you will find a new joy in your life that you have not experienced, and that we want to challenge everyone to be a part of it. And I can tell you, I have known 3 churches that have tried this, and every one of them came back with amazing results because the people discovered blessing. One of them is sitting in this room right now, and he'll probably tell in his Sunday school class about it, I'm sure. But I can tell you that I did this in my church plant in California when we were like 2 years old, and our giving went up, and not one person came back. In fact, so many people came back and said, "This is great. I finally learned how to give, and it's worth it." But our finance team and our church council believe that we will find the heart of God if we take this challenge, that you will grow. Then you will see that we will do good things with what we give. No risk, nothing to lose, everything to gain. As I told you before, my personal testimony is that sacrificial, joyful giving changed my life. And there was a time in my life where I was that guy that's like, "You're not getting a penny from me." I really was. And Jesus changed my life in a lot of ways, but one of the things that he used was teaching me how to give. And this challenge that I'm talking about is between you and God, nothing to sign, no one's going to know, you and him. It's you and him. But here's what I know. The heart of God is to bless. The heart of God is to give. And you are like Jesus when you give of yourself and you give of your resources to make a difference in the lives of the people that we serve as a church. And so this week I want you to pray about it. Paul's going to come up and he's going to play a song right now. We're actually going to take up our offering during this song. But I just want you can also put it in the boxes in the corners. But I just want you to take a moment today as we're singing, and just begin to talk to God. Talk to him about what he would have you do. And let's do like the verse tells us. Let's excel in giving together. Let's grow in blessing others together. If you're a note taker, the dates for this 90-day challenge are September 24th to November 26th. So basically now to Thanksgiving. But I'm telling you, if you give during that time and you try it and you say it's not worth it, we will give every penny back. You just come and you tell Sharon in the office, you tell Claude, the head of finance, mention it to me, whatever you want to do, and we will give it back. No questions asked. We won't try to convince you not to. We'll just hand it right back. But we believe that you will be blessed and you will say it was worth it. And so I want to challenge you to join in. Be a part of it. Help us to be the blessing that we can be.